Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 40% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to say the last time they were on the cover was when it was Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, and Darius Garland way back in the day.
I thought they had one where it was Darius Donovan and Mobley, or was it Darius Donovan and Jared? I don't know. The point is that, slam covers in high school was cool, the same way being on Sports Illustrated was cool. Like, we used to use that as a it was an identifier, right? Like, Bryce Harper's on the cover at 15. LeBron's on the cover at 15. It's like there's greatness happening there, and now it's just kind of not really a thing anymore.
We do have John Fanta coming up in 1 hour's time. I'm glad that we kind of got some confirmation there with Darius that it meant something. I'm glad that the Cavs are not so subtly telling us, yeah, we didn't really like J.B. Bickerstaff at the end, and we're not sad that he's gone.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty strong words by Darius. Even though, remember, after the game, we had there was that weird back and forth where they went to hug, and then Darius kind of called him fat.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, what happened here?
I think he
and
just pointed out his belly. That J.B.'s got a big stomach now. I don't think that's calling him fat. He was just saying more portly.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
If I was J.B., I don't know how I would take that one. They should. They should feel a certain way about JB.
I was actually thinking about this the other day. I actually think JB's with a team that kind of fits what he wants now. Like, this Pistons team is very chippy. They talk all the time. Isaiah Stewart thinks he's Draymond Green and plays like Robert Tractor Trailer. Mm-hmm. If you look at his numbers, they're awful this year. But, like... they've got one guy. That guy does the heavy lifting.
And you can just run Cade Cunningham into the ground.
J.B. Bickerstaff goes full Thibodeau with that roster, and nobody gives a rip because they're just happy to be winning. But there is, like, J.B. is a, I want you to be physically tough, and I'm going to chirp a lot at the refs. His team totally fits that now.
Well, it works. It works the same way it worked for the Cavs in the early stages. He was good at that in Memphis. He was good at that in Houston. And he was good at that here.
Well, but in fairness, the Cavs were never... The Cavs played good defense. They were never tough. They were never cheap shot team.
No, I meant being the guy that can like elevate teams to getting to a certain stature. Yeah. And then obviously the sad part for JB Bickerstaff and what he learned in this whole process is that he's never the guy to take you up over the top, but he is the guy to at least make you somewhat respectable.
Now this, knowing that the Cavs are just like, yeah, we're happy JB's not here anymore, right? Because again, I think it's not just about, well, bleep JB. I think it's also Kenny Atkinson fits whatever their vibe is. And I think that's incredibly important for these dudes, especially these stars. The Pistons are a half game out of the fifth spot in the Eastern Conference. I kind of want to see if we can get maybe a Cavs-Pistons second-round matchup.
Oh, a second-round matchup?
Yeah.
Well, you'd love that because we would just find our way in the Eastern Conference Finals then.
Well, no. I would love that because I'd love to get to the Eastern Conference Finals by beating JB Bickerstaff.
That's a major win if the Pistons get to the second round. Like, for Detroit fans, Detroit basketball has been left for dead in recent years.
But think about it. They're so much closer to the fifth seed than they are the seventh seed. They're like four and a half games up off the seventh spot. They're only a half game behind Milwaukee. So, and oh, by the way, the team you'd play in fourth seed, Indiana versus Detroit, would be a wild mismatch of identities. So wild that I think if Detroit just beat the crap out of them, I think they could actually win that series, despite not having a quarter of the talent that Indiana has.
I was just say, there's no way they get past Indiana.
To me, Indiana, I think last year was so fluky. I think Indiana's a... everything...
Halliburton alone is going to be good enough in that series,
everything
though.
That some people have said about the Cavs, that the Cavs are a good regular season team and not a great postseason team, I think that's Indiana to a T. I think last year was a total fluke. I don't think they'll ever go to the Eastern Conference Finals again as constructed. I mean, hell, they were already talking about should we trade off Miles Turner at the deadline, which they've talked about for 7 years anyways. But they've talked about it because I think they realize they've already hit their peak as constructed.
Listen, you want to sign me up for some Pistons-Cavs second round? I'm thrilled, but it's not because I'm thrilled we get to beat up on JB Bickerstaff. I'm just thrilled that would clinch us into the Eastern Conference Finals.
But it's the best of both worlds.
There's no way you lose that series.
Now, so we heard Darius from the Slam Magazine conversation. We also saw Darius in Cleveland Magazine calling this season his revenge season, which I kind of think is a wild, like, on one hand, kudos. Like, a lot of what was said about you last year, at least in the regular season, has been disproven or shot down that you're washed or you were never that good or you were whatever it was. That has been disproven in the regular season this year, him having either his best or second best season as a pro.
Yeah, so in the piece, and it was interesting because it was kind of like Tristan and Darius kind of interviewing each other, and then it was edited. But I thought it was fascinating that you remember Baker Mayfield when he was in college at Oklahoma. He had this big list, and this list that he kept on the wall in his locker was all the people that he just thought was basically done him wrong. Like people that he just despised, whether it was media people, whether that was coaches, whether that was players. He had this big hit list. And in that piece, you learn that Darius himself has this like list of people that he's out to prove wrong. He's got media members on there. He's got front office members on there. He's got coaches on there. And you can tell he's driving into that. But he spoke as if the job was already done, Nick. And the job for him isn't done yet. His revenge season isn't complete until he does it in the postseason.
Has he reversed 90% of the narratives that were about last regular season?
He's reversed a lot of it. And I'm not saying he's Lamar Jackson. But if you think about Lamar in this context, Lamar is great in the regular season. And in the postseason, he disappears and isn't the same player. I think that's what a lot of people think about with Darius. Like the job, yes, you're on your way. But he's not there yet. He still has to do it in the postseason. If you're going to call it revenge season, that's what I need. Like you call it a comeback season is different. Say, okay, great. It's a massive comeback. You've righted the wrong with a lot of the haters. That's one thing. Revenge season suggests that you've done it to an extensive degree, and that only happens in the postseason to me.
Yeah, I disagree completely. I think revenge is absolute complete, and we never have to talk about it again. It's like the playoffs are icing on the cake. But the knock on Darius is you can't stay healthy. You can't. You and Donovan can't work together. Answered.
Well, right now the health thing, by the way, is a question mark because his shooting hasn't been good since early March, and people are wondering if it happened with that fall.
Well, yeah, and also he could just be having a bad month. Like that's. I mean, I'm not trying to oversimplify it, but my point is, that even when we tie it to, well, was it the fall? It's speculation. We don't know.
Right, but we can't say that's checked off as if it's just gone and done.
I mean, he stayed healthy and he's having a career season. A bounce back season where I think he should be, I almost said most improved. What's the comeback player of the year?
Yeah.
Although I can't remember what the new dumb rules are on that, but it's definitely new and they're definitely dumb. But I think he's answered as much as you possibly can in the regular season. I do look at the two things as different. Like, to me, Darius's playoff stuff, that to me is part and parcel with the rest of the Cavs. The other narratives on Darius were totally about what happened after he broke his jaw last year. And does he have the heart for it? Does he have this? Does he have that? He's played like a menace all season long. And I mean, even something as simple as, well, can he do it late in games? He's done it late in games, as evidence with the Detroit shot where he sunk their battleship in a very exciting win. So like, I almost fed out the playoff stuff just because Darius is not alone in that. Like, Darius's revenge tour, like the Cavs' revenge tour to me is the playoffs. Darius is the postseason.
Did I think people went overboard when he missed the two free throws in the Rockets game and people wanted to just bury him? Yeah, I thought people did. I think he's been spectacular this season, and I think he's done a lot of righting the wrongs. But to speak as if it was a completed revenge season and to speak as if he'd had done the task and everyone is just, everything's in my rearview mirror, not for me. You got to do it in the postseason, Darius.
Yeah, but I think for most people, because remember, there were people last year saying, I don't care what it cost. I don't care if you have to sell low on Darius.
Sure, yeah.
And there were people in the media and Cavs fans. Two years previously, when I had said I would trade Darius for Donovan, which, let's just own it, was a dumb take then because you didn't have to, right? I was screamed at. Right? It was my first month back in the race. It's great here. I was screamed at. You can't do that. I'd rather have Darius than Donovan. We went from that to sell him. I don't care. Get rid of him. He doesn't fit with Donovan. He's part of the problem. I don't think any of those Cavs fans are saying that right now. So that is the, like, if we get to, it wasn't just that people were like, you can't do it in the playoffs. That's 60% of the NBA. And it happens to be 100% of your roster, but it's 60% of the NBA is, well, I'll believe that they're whatever we think they are in the playoffs. That's most of the NBA. And by the way, most of those guys don't ever prove it because we have such high standards for it. No. This was people saying Darius was overrated, washed, was a byproduct of scoring points in a bad team, couldn't stay healthy, bad teammate, bad this, bad that, trade his ass, trade request. Nobody's saying that anymore. Nobody's saying, yes, it is.
No, it
isn't. From that standpoint of everything that was uttered about him, where it got a little personal for some in Cleveland, including some Cavs fans, yeah, I think he's answered all those calls because nobody's saying that crap anymore.
I think a lot of people are still wondering what's going to happen in this postseason. And to act as if he has answered everything.
But how is that different for the rest of the Cavs?
Just to answer, well, I mean, obviously there's a lot within the Cavs team that they have to prove in the postseason. But I think the spotlight's on Darius more than it is on anyone else. Donovan will show up in the postseason.
Oh,
we know that.
I think the spotlight's fully on Evan. Because I think that's where the expectations are. I think
a lot of people are saying that as Darius goes is how we go. Who do we have? This is more than just Brad Doherty.
Was that Bill Reiter?
No.
He was Mr. MVP for.
No, I think this is actually what Pat Bev said. The clip we wanted to play yesterday, where he mentioned something about that same effect. Like they're going to be as Darius is because he just has that much of an impact. And when you can get the great Darius, it just changes this whole entire team in such a way that is so different when you just have average Darius, or even the Darius that showed up in like Game 7 of the Magic series last year.
Audio courtesy of FanDuel Sports. We'll get to Russell Wilson here in a moment. He ain't going nowhere except for New York, and it don't mean nothing to the Browns. But we'll get to our reasonings behind that coming up here in just a moment. Tone, Cavs won.
Yes, it
did. Back-to-back wins after a four-game losing streak.
Huge,
all's well again.
Huge way to end the streak, especially considering Donovan didn't play last night. Darius was Mr. Clutch again, got some of his shooting back, had the floater working yesterday. Ty Jerome might have been the best guard in the game, which was nice off the bat. I have to respond to something.
Please do.
I heard the promo, and I got to tell you.
Yes, you did.
I love this. A lot of the afternoon show talks a lot about vibes, which I don't know. Me and you don't really talk vibes as much as the afternoon show does, so I can't tap into that the way that the afternoon show can certainly channel. So it's something we're working on as a show.
We're channeling. We're working on channeling vibes.
Yeah, yeah. I feel bad. We don't really talk about vibes as much as maybe we should. As
you
much as
the other show. We had a guy come in, taught us how to channel vibes.
Was he the vibe consultant?
Yes.
But maybe I've missed this, and I don't know. I remember the afternoon show was big on hiring. What was it? Barrejo was his name.
JJ Barrejo.
JJ.
Was that what it is?
It was something.
James. Of JJ Barea.
James.
I think.
James Barrejo. That's yes. It. James Barrejo. Yeah.
And so
that's
I thought was. Nick was mad in the offseason that they didn't hire the guy that he had covered in Charlotte, right? So instead.
I don't know if he was mad.
Oh,
was he mad?
Yeah. He talked about it was. He made it sound like Gilbert came in and Kobe had his guy. Then Gilbert came in and said, no, I want this guy. Which
so,
I didn't
I
see
remember.
Any reporting. Maybe Nick had some intel on that nobody else had. But obviously, when Kenny Atkinson has been this good, I don't think anybody could complain about the job that Kenny Atkinson has done. He's probably going to win Coach of the Year. Yeah. Bickerstaff's closing in on him.
They have now officially eclipsed the 2015-16 Cleveland Cavaliers in terms of wins for a season.
And they got to go, 9-1 in their last 10 to set the franchise record.
Yes.
So it's a nice way to close many times last game of a road trip. Especially if you're not playing Donovan, playing your best player.
Comes poop.
You could be susceptible to losing. And, last night there were some precarious moments, but I think Darius finding his game, especially like he did in the fourth quarter, was huge. But Nick said something in that promo that we ran right before the show started.
All right.
Interesting that every time the Cavs have been met with force, it's immediately spun the Cavs out of rhythm. The only thing I'm pretty sure about is the guy who I know is going to be consistent in the playoffs is going to be Kenny Atkinson.
I thought to myself, man, that is some... I love the confidence. I love the confidence in the head coach who's only been a head coach in one playoff series, has one career playoff win. So, I appreciate the hell out of Nick having that confidence in his coach being consistent in the playoffs, considering he has no playoff experience as a head coach. So I want to channel those vibes, Kenny. Can you meet me here on a vibe check for an inexperienced playoff coach?
Put the paper down.
No.
It's time to do a vibe check.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Let's go. Give me the vibe check. Thumbs up or down for the cameras? Because
hey,
the people on radio
thumbs
can't
up.
Hear you.
Thumbs up. Thumbs
okay,
up.
Okay, good.
Well, we all think he's a good.
Yes.
We all think he's a great coach.
We don't know anything about the playoffs, but we know he's a very.
He was an assistant. He was an assistant during playoff runs.
Experienced.
He won a championship
assistant coach.
As an assistant, he's by osmosis.
Yes.
It's been there. Yeah. You're close enough to anything.
In fact, we went over yesterday. You know where some of his experience was as an assistant head coach on the humiliated Atlanta Hawks team that the Cavs humiliated that this Cavs team has been compared to.
Oh, my God.
So I hope those aren't the. I hope that's not the consistency
that.
Nick's talking about. I hope it's the Golden State Warrior consistency.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anywho, it was nice. It was nice that the Cavs were able to close that. Because had they lost the last two? Remember, they had a bad first half against Utah. And again, Portland had actually had a nice little stretch here, but they're not going to make the play-in. They're going to be the outside looking in. They took 55 threes last night.
Yeah, they did.
And couldn't hit anything.
They got their money.
So
worth.
That was nice. Cavs finally found their three-point shot again. And it's nice when you play a team and you're hot and they are ice cold. It was a surprise they didn't. Man, I'll tell you what was surprising was how Portland was able to go right to the basket against us. So that interior defense, I know we've been giving up threes a lot, and last night was a little bit different, but I've seen teams go at us more, just overall, been more aggressive. I wonder if the book on the Cavs now that all the teams are following is just keep attacking, which you would think that would be the book on any team in the NBA, but we definitely seem more susceptible. We definitely have some defensive weaknesses that I was willing to chalk up to, it's the end of the season.
Well,
it's
if
March.
We're so used to it, no, I can't say that. I mean, they did shoot 52 threes because I was, for a second, I was going to say, if they're not going to hit them every single night, and the Cavs, it's not been a good March for them overall, shooting the three as a team.
Well, our defensive numbers have plummeted.
That as well. But if you're not going to hit them every night, then why wouldn't you just attack the lane? Can't you throw the ball to the block and attack them then if they're not going to do it? Because if their perimeter defense is there waiting for a three, he throw it in, but at the same time, it's like, well, they did try 52 threes last night and only hit 17 of them. So I'm not necessarily sure about that. I do want to bring up something that, all jokes aside, something that we did enjoy. That was the question of whether or not Darius Garland, the revenge tour, has to end with something meaningful in the playoffs. I think we can all agree. And yesterday, you know, I talked about it, and it was one of those things, again, at least once a week, I'm driving home like, man, I should have said that. I think yesterday we are looking for postseason answers during the regular season. We are trying to answer postseason questions while the regular season is going on. And because we can't really answer them, we can only prognosticate, it immediately goes back to our negative side of it. Not everybody. I think there's definitely some people who are very positive, and they should be positive about a 58-14 Cavs team. But the negative side always tends to be louder in these situations. And so when they lost four in a row, like when they lost to the Suns the other night, it was like, okay, is everything fine now, Ken? Is everything fine now? Like, they don't remember any of the good stuff. It's, is everything fine now? Okay. I can't say everything's fine after they lost to the Suns. There's something, but you know what? If I go back to it, isn't it always the same stuff we talk about in the postseason? Okay, are they going to shed the soft label? Is Darius going to be able to step up in the big moment? Is Donovan going to be able to lead the team the way he is? Is Darius going to be able to be the Robin to the Batman of Donovan Mitchell? Is Evan Mobley going to be able to take the next step? I mean, these are things that we ask to each other in October, let alone now. So they're just the same questions. And I think we're a little bit frustrated because we can never truly answer them during the regular season. Win 16 games in a row. Win 26 games in a row. I don't think it matters to a lot of fans out there. I think you're still going to be wondering because over the last couple of years. And I think that that's maybe a little bit frustrating. Like, they win 16 games in a row, they lose one, and it's all, I've been saying this, like, no, you haven't. It's been all quiet on the Western Front. Now they won two in a row. Is it all going to be quieter? No, I think we're close enough to the postseason now where we kind of think, okay, these are just questions that they have to answer, and we'll see if they can answer them with some of these matchups that they have.
Yeah, I would say the only thing, because I'm not overreacting at all to a West Coast trip. It's been a 2-month steady diet of our backcourt just not shooting the ball well. So that's part of it too. Was it regression to the mean? Was it injury stuff? I mean, the groin with Donovan is something to keep an eye on now, right? I mean, if his groin, you don't want him limping into the playoffs because that's kind of what we had last year. He still had some unbelievable performances. But it also held you back. I mean, it's part of the reason you went to seven games with an undermanned, inexperienced Orlando team. So you factor that in. The thing that was weird to me was the Clippers and those Suns games. You got the best out of the Suns and the Clippers. Those games had their fans thinking, oh, those are the teams we're supposed to be. And I said this, that if you kind of parachuted in to those games, you hadn't seen anything all year, you'd been in a coma, you'd be like, oh yeah, the Clippers with Kawhi, and that's vintage Kevin Durant, like, they're just better, they have better players, which has not been the case at all this year.
Yeah, it's true.
The Cavs have been the better team, they've had the better players. You know, Donovan, until recently, has been a lock for all NBA first team. Now that's starting to be in question. Darius, I thought, was a lock to be an all NBA player, and you know, his numbers have dropped off a cliff. His efficiency dropped off a cliff. So I don't know. Evan Mobley, once Wemby went down, because it was going to be Wemby winning Defensive Player of the Year. Now you're noticing some pundits are like attacking Evan Mobley as if he's not an elite defender.
I disagree with that. But
yeah, it's strange. I do think more guys are attacking him, like on closeouts and beating him off the dribble. You see more of that. But, you know, it's in the playoffs. Like, I'm betting on Evan Mobley to be able to hold his ground defensively. I have no reason to think otherwise. So all of that together, that was the only thing about this West Coast trip that bothered me. And DeMar DeRozan got off too. I don't think Darius played in that game. But other than that, like I got to tell you, that was the only thing that surprised me was I don't expect at this stage, like the Suns have been downtrodden all year. And you want to talk about a vibe check. They have had bad body language.
Very bad vibes.
It seemed all year they wanted their coach fired. And yet, in those games, like, tit for tat, like, those teams just look better than us. yeah. which is just unexpected.
So I think that, you know, we've done the pressure conversation to death. I think some people aren't going to like this, and this is very big picture, and I think what you're breaking down is good. This is going to be seen as soft, but fine. You want to talk about my vibes here. When you bring up Evan Mobley, and I think, okay, what are my realistic goals? As good as this season has been, I don't find it to be a waste of a regular season if you go up and lose in six games against the Boston Celtics. If it looks good, if it's a tough played series, if you lose in six to the Boston Celtics, I don't think it's a wasted year. I think if you lose in six to the Boston Celtics or lose in seven to the Celtics, I think that these are things that I can accept. And I can hope that Evan continues to take strides. I don't want to freak out, but I think that people will. And they'll decide to make moves with the core four. The people want to make moves with the core four. I'm not sold that the Cavs would actually do that. But I think that we have to be realistic about this in certain ways. Because I am not, I think that's part of it. I'm not freaking out because I know you're going to be going into that series as the underdog. I mean, that has to be knocked down. They expect you to not win that series. Now, it's not a four-game sweep, but they expect you to not win that series. So that being in my head, knowing that that's what Vegas already is going to put out there, and that's what's going to happen. If they win the series, it's a great underdog. It's a great win. You're a great team. You beat a great team that's a defending champion. That's all wonderful. But I can't allow myself to freak out, and I'm afraid that's what's going to happen if they were to lose in six or seven to the Boston Celtics. I'm trying to be pragmatic about this because there has been a long time where I was ready to freak out. A lot of other people were too. After that Knicks series 2 years ago, it was embarrassing. We were wondering about Kobe Altman. We were wondering about Mike Gansey and everybody else. And they have been very, very judicious here. And this has been piece by piece. I know they made one big move. That's a huge move. But a lot of other things, boy, it has been something that we've had to be patient for. It's not Danny Ainge patience, but damn, we've had to be patient. So I'm just being honest and pragmatic about this. I want them to win. I think they can win that series. But if they make it to that series and things don't go our way in six or seven, you're not getting me freaking out yelling at Kenny Atkinson and Kobe Altman and these four guys in the core four. It ain't going to happen.
No, and that's why you're paying attention to just what's going on. Because it's not just about this year. Obviously, you expect the Cavs to be really good next year. And you're paying attention to the new ownership in Boston. Are they going to be able to keep everybody? Horford's going to be up for a new contract. I think Holiday is somebody. People wonder if it's going to be back there. So the Cavs could potentially just wait out the Celtics' demise unless, of course, they go and get Kevin Durant, which has been a rumor over the last 24 hours.
I want to be optimistic, Andy. I'm having a hard time being optimistic.
I'll be optimistic 2 out of every 5 games, won't you?
That's not going to be enough.
That's not enough?
Right. I don't think it is.
I feel optimistic, my friend.
I don't think that's enough.
Well, if you can get the other three to get one, if you can go 1 and 3.
I don't think that's enough.
That's three.
I don't think that's what we're thinking.
Let's not forget the bullpen carried them a little bit last year, too. So.
Okay. I don't think that's what we're thinking of.
It only took me 1 hour and 43 minutes to sigh.
For the Baskin sigh? Yeah. The Cavaliers wrapping up the road trip tonight in Portland against the Trailblazers.
Thank God. Come home.
What does that mean?
Come home. Why? Just get some rest.
Get some rest.
They need some rest. Yeah, let's get ready for the playoffs.
They're taxing themselves so much out
this
there.
This hasn't been a fun trip. I'm sorry. I mean, Utah was fun because they decided that they were going to turn the switch on second half.
And they were playing the second worst team in the NBA.
Well, that seemed to help out too, didn't it?
Who didn't have Lauri Markkanen.
We only have a 15-game lead in the Central now, Jeff. I'm a little concerned. Only a 15-game lead on Indiana in the Central. Oh, wait. We're looking at the other one.
It's really the worst. They already clinched the Central.
I know. Were you there for the parade for that one? How'd you like that parade, Jeff?
Are you ever going to let that division thing go?
No, I want a T-shirt. Can somebody send me a Central Division T-shirt? That's what I want for my birthday next year. Cavs, 2025 Central Division Champions. We don't win a lot of championships around here. Can we celebrate? Let's live where our feet are right now. Central Division Champions.
There's my sigh.
Pound your chest, my friends. Meanwhile, the lead in the Eastern Conference is 4.5.
Yeah, you know, they should have it. Don't you think?
What was the magic number, 7?
Yeah.
With the...
Yeah. It's still 7. I would think you're going to get that.
Yeah, I would have thought they would have done a little better on this trip, too. So,
well, no, that's true. Cavs have 11 games left to go.
That's a combination of seven wins and losses between the Celtics.
Cavs and Celtics, yeah. I am, but I'm starting to think, okay, make sure you don't do this too much. Are you okay with guys getting some rest?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
I'm good with it.
Do you think they need to regroup a little bit, say the last five, six games of the season, and roll out their team and play their guys?
Here's what I know.
Make sure that the starters are out there together for an extended period of time. And
if you listen to any of Kenny Atkinson's press conferences after the game, post-game, he absolutely 100% can see everything that's going on. This isn't like nothing is coming as a surprise to him. And if you listen to Pre, too, it's the same kind of stuff. Like, he'll tell you exactly. He watches it. It's so refreshing to hear a coach actually say what you're thinking during the game. Why did they do that? What was that all about? And he thinks the same thing. And it's not like he's calling out.
Why did I do that?
Yeah, it's not. I've never heard him say, why do I do that?
Yeah, I know. Well, maybe you should.
There's something refreshing about him.
Why did I make almost every right move a coach could possibly make?
How did we end up playing all these teams that had injuries along the way? I mean, how did we end up getting the right, some of it's luck. Let's be honest. They had the luck of the draw in a lot of these games in the schedule throughout the season. That doesn't mean they didn't have to go out and play hard and win. They did. Let's get through this game. So how many home games left? They have 6 home games left. So let's go get it. Wrap this thing up. Let's get to the playoffs, and then we'll see how things fall out after that. Plus, you get a little time to rest during that stupid play-in tournament.
Did that 4-game losing streak dampen your enthusiasm for what this team might be able to do in the postseason at all?
I think
it exposed an issue that we knew was there anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's real clear the guys who hurt them during that losing streak were the bigger guys who play on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
For like every team.
But we've kind of seen that all season, haven't we? Well, there's a reason why everyone's been saying this is their Achilles heel.
They didn't lose games. Hardly ever. Hardly ever. And here they lost 4 of the last 5. 4 in a row.
You worried?
What do you mean by worried?
Are you worried that they can't get past, say, the second round of the playoffs?
Yeah.
Are you worried they can't get past the first round of the playoffs?
I'd be stunned if they don't get past the first round of the playoffs. I would not be stunned if they got knocked out in the second round. But I would be floored if they lost their first-round playoff series. Right now, I think it's Miami, just the way the thing plays out. There are a lot more games to go and everything. But right now, it feels like Miami might be their opponent. And you know how I feel about that Heat organization. I don't like it, but boy, do I respect it.
Yeah.
Spoelstra can just coach.
Do you think it's interesting that they have a bunch of these games? How many games have 2, 4? I keep counting on the air. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. What, have 12 games, 11 games?
One of your better attributes.
Thank you. I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of games on national TV down the stretch. Both the New York games are.
I know.
One's on ESPN. The April 2nd game on ESPN is. And then the last time they play New York, which is at New York on April 11th, that's on NBA TV, for whatever that's worth.
Everybody wants to poo-poo the Knicks.
I'm not.
I'm not either. I honestly think that the Knicks could be a heck of a challenge, man. I really do. And right now, the way it's set up, right now, it would be Celtics and Knicks in the same bracket of the East. The Cavs wouldn't see either the Celtics or the Knicks until an Eastern Conference Finals. However, the Knicks have a 2.5-game lead on the Indiana Pacers.
So the right now the Cavs would be sitting, the Pacers would be on our side of the bracket, right?
And the Bucks.
Bucks, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then whoever the worst of the play-in teams is, right? The 8 seed, yeah. Because the 7 seed would move up.
I believe that's
Celtics.
Correct.
Yep. So you're looking at, at this point, you'd be looking at the
We had Matt Moore on from the Action Network yesterday. He said, look out for the Pacers. He thought the Pacers were an interesting team. And I thought that that was an interesting thought by Matt, because I, you know, and again, people, I think a lot of people are poo-pooing the Milwaukee Bucks as well. And I'm about the only guy who thinks the Bucks could be a real challenge for the Cavs.
Well, you just said the Pacers, too. I mean, look, it's
Matt said the Pacers. I thought that was an interesting thought.
I'm not expecting a walk in the park in any of these series.
No, I'm
even
not
the first
either.
Round. The first round, you're looking at the winner of the Heat Bulls will play the loser of the Magic Hawks. So, and both those teams have figured out a way to beat the Cavs. So.
Matt thought that Pascal Siakam, and I like Siakam a lot. I think he's a terrific player. Could be a handful, and he's a 6'8" wing guy. I can certainly understand that.
Are we worried about Donovan Mitchell's groin injury? Is this starting to creep?
He's not. I had the numbers in front of me the other day. He's struggling shooting, especially from 3 points.
What was it? The Phoenix game? He was 2 of 18, something like that. That was ridiculous. But
I mean, I've got it right here in front of me.
I'm not concerned about it. I'm assuming until they shut him down for an extended period and don't just go with a game of rest here and there, that he's fine and we'll be okay.
All right, so the last month, just to have everything out there, 5 of 13, 0 of 5 from 3. 2 of 18, 0 of 8 from 3.
Wait a minute. Are these average stats? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just telling you how many shots he made versus how many shots he went against.
Yeah,
and his three-pointers in between, because the three-point percentage has been in the toilet.
Yes.
So that's it. It's just shots made versus shots attempted. Very simple.
Average? Is that what you were saying?
No. Shots made against shots attempted. So 5 for 13. Made 5 shots against 13 shots that he put up.
In a game?
That is correct.
Okay. So an average per game.
There's no average. I don't know where you're getting average. Maybe I'm not tracking.
Well, what are you... I don't understand what you're citing.
He's in a bad shooting slump. That's what I'm citing, and I'm going game by game going, okay.
Okay, there you go. You're going game by game.
Yeah, game by game. Okay, cool. Now we're on the same page.
Yeah.
We did it. All right. 5 of 13, 2 of 18, 8 of 17, 5 of 18, 9 of 28, then sat for 2 games. 4 of 15, 6 of 19, 8 of 17, 7 of 17, and sat.
Well... people haven't liked it when I've pointed this out, and you might not agree with me on this. Donovan's not a great shooter. He's a great scorer, and there's a difference.
He's aggressive to the rim. That's the best way I could put that.
For instance, I've never thought LeBron James is a great shooter, but LeBron's the greatest scorer in the NBA, in the history of the NBA. I mean, LeBron can go get you a basket. Donovan can go get you a basket. A great shooter is a guy like Steph Curry. You know, a guy like I think Kyrie is a great shooter. You know, there's a difference, and it's not a knock on Donovan, and he can get hot and knock down outside shots like crazy. But I think scoring is his forte, and not just shooting. You understand the difference, right?
Oh, I totally get it. I get it, and I don't like. I'm not expecting like. Garland, I expect. Well, like, I love Garland. When Garland gets hot, he's fun to watch.
Darius is a better shooter, I think.
You know? Right. But typically, he's a little more efficient than that.
You're absolutely right.
Like, now I have month to month shooting percentage, if you want that. Month to month field goal percentage.
Yeah.
50% in October, 43% in November, 46% in December, 44% in January, 49% in February, with some rounding, and March, 33%.
Yeah.
There's something going on here.
Well, and it's not like March is a week into it. We're almost done with March. I would assume he's fine because the Cavs keep rolling him out there. If he's not fine, shut him down. Right?
Yeah, I'm
heal
just looking
it up.
Did you give numbers for this entire trip? Because I'm just kind of going back on this.
I gave the month of March.
This trip has not been fun. Not fun at all. Just even looking at he's. At least one of his last 18, and he was 2 for 9 against the Clippers, so 3 for 27. Ugh. Going back to
stay
the Clippers.
Tuned. He's sitting out tonight's final game of the road trip against Portland, and then we'll see what happens when they get back home. I'm assuming that he's in a shooting slump and that it's not a physical problem Otherwise, I think they would have shut him down for an extended period of time. And if it is a physical problem and they haven't shut him down for an extended period of time, then they might have a major issue on their hands.
All right, finally, the Cavs are coming home. Tonight against San Antonio, 7 o'clock. So it'll be nice. Get a little Guardians action. Then that'll end. You go right over to the Cavs. It looks like, what, Evan Mobley is going to be out of this game. As you see the rest of the season, I think that's kind of what they're going to be doing.
Somebody's going to be out every game.
They should.
Yeah, I don't.
They have nothing to play for right now.
You know, maybe you'd make the argument, but how are they going to get back on the same page? It's like basketball is not...
Stop it.
It's not the NFL.
Stop it.
It's not the NFL. Like, in the NFL, there is a split on whether or not teams even... You take the bye because of health.
Right.
But there are a bunch of NFL guys around the league who are like, it's not good. It's not good
you
for
also
a playoff run.
One bad day can ruin your season.
Right. Right.
Here you get a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes you 5 minutes to get your bearings down, and then you're good to go.
Are we allowed to talk about the Cavs championship run? Can I make that comparison, or is it so irrelevant and that, like, it's not even worth talking about? Because one of the things that I think that they did, like, talking about time off and rest, one of the things that they did that really helped their cause was the way that they would sweep teams. Like, they would, and then they'd get a week off, and they'd get off their feet
wow.
for a week.
And think about what happened in 2016. Steph Curry was fighting for his life in that series, you know, right before.
Yeah, with the Thunder.
The Western Conference games. Finals went seven games. Yeah. They came from behind. Like, that was huge. Well, that doesn't get talked about a lot. It doesn't get talked about because Golden State got out to a 3-1 lead.
Right.
But the totality
yes.
of that playoff
and that's,
run.
And that's the point of that. And David Griffin said that. When I wrote the book after the championship, Griff said, like, the finals is a war of attrition. And people don't realize the physical toll that it takes on you to play these games night after night, series after series, and the Warriors losing Bogut, you know, stuff like that. And just for the fact that the Cavs, and they were a little bit of an older team, for them to be able to get off their feet for a week, to have all that time off between series, I think was a massive, massive advantage that they have. So rest now? Yes, of course you want to rest, guys. It's the end of March. Like, 70s off the table, all that stuff, and that it's probably not a bad thing that's out of reach at this point.
You didn't need them pushing for that stuff. No.
Just chip and putt your way. Get to the end of the season. Make sure guys are healthy. Whatever's going on with Donovan, give him as much time off as he needs. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, especially with that groin situation.
And just be ready to go. Because remember, I mean, Donovan had the knee thing throughout the second half last year. Donovan was not good the first couple games of the Orlando series. At all. So get him as much rest as you need right now. It doesn't matter. And get these guys ready to go for the playoffs.
All right. So the Cavaliers had that 4-game losing streak. I didn't really sense the panic. I know people were alleging that, like, radio was panicking. It's like, no. We weren't. But I will say, if there was one thing that may have gotten exposed, which I think is just kind of the reality of the NBA, that, you know, wing players, when they are on, you can't really guard them in this league. And Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, and even DeMar DeRozan kind of had their way against us. Now, I know we're not going balls to the walls like we were earlier in the season, but I think even in a playoff series, that would be that's tough to stop, right? Even with DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah.
Now, you got a guy that's better suited because of his length.
Sure.
And you got more guys to throw at, you know, those opposing players. But that was the only thing that I did notice. And I will say, you know, I watched Boston. I watched the first half of that game last night against the Suns. When they didn't have Tatum. When Porzingis is healthy, I think Celtics are the best team. And I don't think that's changed.
But I didn't need the West Coast trip to know that. Like, we were talking, like, does the West Coast solidify the Cavs? Well, no, we didn't need the West Coast trip to solidify. That doesn't mean the Cavs can't win a series. Of course they can. They could beat Boston in a 7-game series.
Which I didn't think they could. I honestly did not think they could until they got DeAndre Hunter.
See, I thought they could before DeAndre. Because Boston is like Team ADD. And you just never know which version is going to show up or when they're going to lose interest and when they're going to see a squirrel and zone out for 6 minutes. The fact that the Cavs kept that series last year is, I know they lost in five. But they were in those games, and as beat up as they were, and without Donovan, like, Boston can be got, and adding Hunter only adds to that. But they, to me, are still the team to beat because they are the defending champs. they've got two monsters on the wing. And until you do it in the postseason, they have to be the favorite. But I wholeheartedly believe the Cavs can beat that team.
I think that, and yes, 216-474-0092. I mean, you've seen, like, the Cavs aren't afraid of Boston.
No.
And Donovan Mitchell, I would say, because I know I have friends and media cohorts in Boston, that I could tell you they are scared, legitimately scared of Donovan Mitchell. That when Donovan Mitchell is going up against them and he is, you know, asserting himself, like, he can be the best player in any of those games. Over Tatum, over Brown, over Porzingis. With all of that said, I just, man, I watched Porzingis last night, and I'm like, he is unguardable.
He's a game changer.
He is unguardable, and he's also an interior presence defensively. You don't think of him that way.
Yeah.
But every time we play them, like, we just kind of got to get by one guy, and it can be a layup line in regular season games. When he's there in the playoffs, he dramatically alters things. Like, I think Darius struggles when Porzingis is in there. Well, he just struggles against Boston in particular. And I just think they give you a different look. And his health is so paramount to their success and them looking like the Boston Celtics. Like, if he's healthy all year, I what is their record? I know they're not necessarily gunning for any special record or anything, but I just think they're a different team.
With Porzingis? Yeah, they're really good without him. They're a monster with him. And that's, you know, you have to assume health at this point, and they're going to have everybody available, and that makes the challenge that much greater, and that's a big reason. Like, I don't think the Cavs hid from the fact that they went out and got DeAndre Hunter because of Boston. To match up, and not just Porzingis, but just the length that they pose on the perimeter and the problems that has caused a team like the Cavs in the past. That's the whole reason DeAndre Hunter's here. And the Darius thing's interesting because, you know, they've used... In the past, I'm not saying they're going to do this in the playoffs, but in the past, they've used Darius to guard Tatum on switches. And that takes a lot out of Darius, I think,
right,
on the defensive end that we don't ever talk about.
I think that is a huge point that people will look at the numbers. By the metrics, the Cavs' defense is fine against Boston. But I think it kind of kills Darius over the course of a series to have to worry about all of that and get physical the way that Jaylen Brown just goes right at him, right?
Yeah.
And Tatum hasn't in the regular season. I think the playoffs, Tatum will, I think, use more of his game. I think he might be kind of pacing himself. I think that stuff takes a lot out of Darius, where that energy that he exerts actually costs him on offense.
Sure it does. But part of it was also Boston would get a switch on Tatum on Darius, and then Tatum would take him into the paint. And you'd rather JT shooting from 6 feet than three-pointers.
Yes.
So there's a lot that goes into that, but it does take a toll on Darius on the offensive end. But you're not going to do that for seven games in an entire 48 minutes of a seven-game series. You're not going to have Darius switching on to Tatum. The Cavs are going to mix up some of their defensive coverages, but that's just one sort of thing to point out when you mentioned Darius' struggles against Boston. I think some of it has to do with what they ask him to do on the defensive end in that series.
Matt Moore is the senior NBA writer for the Action Network. He's also the host of the Locked On NBA podcast, and he's with us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Matt, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Good, good.
We're all right. Cavs, we'll get into the recent stumbles in a second. But here they sit. They've dominated the Eastern Conference a good chunk of this season, have sat on top, five-game lead on Boston. Good to go for the number one seed. No collapse on the way. What do you think?
Yeah, magic number for the one seed is seven. They're going to be fine there. I think it's important to remember how weird March is. It's just very important to remember this. Guys have played great basketball for 5 months. Five months. And then, you know, they get through the All-Star break and they play really well coming out of the All-Star break. And then it's like, oh, yeah, you got to do it for another month. Another month with all the injuries and all the fatigue and playing a bunch of weird teams with different lineups and all those kind of things. And the Cavs hit a shooting spell, which was bad. And they haven't played as well as they can at the same time. And so you have this kind of dip on a West Coast road trip. It's important to remember the last year, the Boston Celtics lost to the Atlanta Hawks twice in a week. And they gave up that wild comeback to the Cavaliers last year as well. So it's just, you got to keep in mind that March is the messiest one of them all. I did check and see, like, all right, how many NBA champions are typically great teams? So how many of them have had a four-game losing streak? And the answer is, like, most of them. The Celtics didn't last year. 2023 Nuggets, 2022 Warriors, 2020 Lakers, on and on and on. So overall, it's really important to remember that this basketball is very far away from serious basketball, and I think that that's a reason to keep that in perspective for the Cavs.
Yeah, I think Cavs fans are just a little bit worried about maybe bad habits that could be happening here. Donovan Mitchell's not exactly been lighting it up from beyond the three-point arc. I mean, the guys just are – they just seem a little bit off. And then how do you play through that? And like they said in the win yesterday against Utah, they're like, we just said enough. And then they just turned it on in the second half. I don't know. I worry about teams that think that they can just throw a switch and do that. But maybe this is a team that can do that. You tell me.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we wind up doing is we take the playoffs as a second season instead of looking at it as four distinct seasons. Like, it's four series, and it's against that opponent. You can be playing great basketball, but you run up against a team that messes with what you do fundamentally, and all of a sudden it's, oh, they're not in rhythm. It's because of all the no, it's because they faced a team that put them into a position where they weren't comfortable. So it depends on who they face in those series, and if you're good enough, you can still overcome those types of things. I think the habits are important, but I know that the Cavaliers understand the mechanisms and the execution of what they want to do, and they've shown that and they've proven that. I've actually been really impressed with the fact that after, you know, in mid-January, they started to level off a little bit offensively, and I was like, all right, they might have peaked. And then they got way better, not just offensively, but defensively. They showed an ability to get into the top 10 defensively. They've slid out since then. But they have better – they have a gear that they've shown, and they are not a team that has max – that's what you don't want to be. You want to be a team like the Knicks every single year where you're playing at top gear the whole way and you've got nothing extra for the playoffs. So to me, the Cavs are managing the schedule, and they have another gear that they can get to.
Matt Moore joining us, Locked On NBA podcast, senior NBA writer for the Action Network. As you, I'm sure, understand – the Cavs have been so good all season long. We've been looking for things, you know, praising this and then thinking, could this be an issue? During their four-game losing streak, the guys that really killed them were all guys who play out on the wing. You know, Durant, DeMar DeRozan, Kawhi, Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner. Is that a big concern heading into the playoffs? Is it a little concern? Is it any concern at all?
Yeah, so I think one of the things is they've got a really good system for covering defensively, and they've got some versatility with their bigs. But if you're able to attack, and especially if you're able to spread five out, that's going to be a little bit of an issue. Now, the Clippers game was a little bit different with Zoo on the inside, but that to me is kind of like the big concern here is if they play a five-out team, that's going to necessitate getting them away from what they want to do, which is play the two bigs. And then you're in kind of a more worrisome situation, kind of trying to cover ground, recover inside, and defend the three. So if you're facing a team that can go five out, and obviously Boston, I think, is kind of the prototypical, but Boston's a little bit extreme with that, with how you have to kind of guard them. They're their own problem, I think, you have to solve. I do think there's probably some concerns for those big wings. The good news is in the Eastern Conference, not as many of those. Like, you're not worried about any of the wings on the Knicks really being the primary creator. It's all going to be pick and roll action, which the Cavs are really good at. So if you face Milwaukee, Giannis might be a problem. Like, that might be a real issue in those. But the Cavs have also handled the Bucks very well over the last two seasons. They match up very well with them at this point. So I think there's probably some weaknesses there in terms of the wing defense. But overall, I wouldn't be overly concerned about it given the state of the Eastern Conference.
Let's just talk about Kenny Atkinson for a second and just your thoughts on the job he's been able to do. I think the thing that I like the most about him isn't when they're winning, it's when they're losing. And you listen to what he has to say after the game, and he sees the same game. He's not trying to make stuff up. And if you listen to what he's saying after the game, as a fan, I think sometimes you're like, man, he is watching the same stuff, and he understands what they're doing wrong, and he is getting this right. So just your thoughts on how he's been able to turn this thing around. So, I mean, the way he's been able to turn things around in Cleveland, and then what we can expect from him, you know, as we hit the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that there's oftentimes kind of a tension that will exist between what a coach wants a team to be and what it is, and mm-hmm. this coach is always trying to make it into that. And instead, Atkinson's done such a great job this year of understanding what this team is and getting the most out of what it is versus what he wants it to be. And that, to me, is like such a huge thing in coaching. That kind of flexibility is sometimes pretty rare. You're not just trying to constantly cram a square peg in a round hole. So been a really impressive job, I think, by him on that front. I think, to me, I've looked at it and been like, he built on a lot of the concepts that were installed by JB over the last couple of years and then worked to really improve the individual player performances and fit and where they get their shots, where they are able to work in the offense individually. And so now you have this great kind of chemistry between operating at a very high team level and operating at a very high individual level. And that's honestly rare, where most guys can install a system, but they struggle with getting the most out of players. Some guys can get the most out of players, but the scheme doesn't work. And with Atkinson, it's been both, and that's why they've had such an incredible season.
Matt Moore is joining us from the Action Network, senior NBA writer. You look at the Eastern Conference, you mentioned the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Cavs did handle Milwaukee in the regular season. Right now, Milwaukee's sitting fifth, so they'd have Indiana, in theory, in their first-round series, and the Cavs, in theory, end up playing the winner of that series. Is there anybody in the Eastern Conference other than the Celtics who you think is a real threat, along with, I'm assuming, the Cavs, to come out of the East?
Not to come out of the East, but the only team to really watch out for, I think, beyond Boston is Indiana. They're agents of chaos. They are so comfortable in that disruptor. Nobody believes in us. Nobody expects anything from us. We're going to play our style. We're going to get the ball up and down the floor. Their defense is better than it was last year. Halliburton is either doing nothing and taking extreme heat or taking over games and looking awesome. Pascal Siakam is a big wing, like we talked about, who can score, pass, dribble, drive, everything. Siakam has been, I think, he's been all NBA selection, second or third team this year. That's how good he's been. I think he's been their best player by far. You have guys like Miles Turner that can spread the floor. You have guys like Obi Toppin that can get up and transition. So they have size, physicality, and a style that really disrupts things. They, to me, are the most dangerous team outside of Boston for pulling off an upset. I kind of think about teams in terms of how many rounds can you win, and I definitely think Indiana can win two rounds. I just don't think they can get out of the East.
How about the Knicks? Tom Thibodeau, not surprising, his starters are playing at least 35 minutes a game. Problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's just they're going to run out again. They're going to get worn down. Brunson gets this rest while he's injured and is going to come back, and then they're going to be hurt with somebody else, whether it's OG Anunoby, who has a bad injury history, or Mikal Bridges, or Karl Anthony Towns. Somebody's going to be hurt, and then on top of it, like I kind of mentioned earlier, I don't think they have a higher gear, and their normal gear is that bad defensively. Just is. It's almost impossible for them to defend with Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns on the court at a high level. They just can't do it. You can't hide those two guys, no matter how many wings you have. So to me, based off of everything I've seen in Tibbs' career and in the regular season matchups between both the Celtics and the Cavaliers, I really don't think the Knicks are going anywhere this season beyond the second round.
Yeah, Matt, it just kind of hit me over the weekend too when I was watching NCAA. Like, how much can a guy really up his stock during the NCAA tournament while you're playing? Sometimes it just feels like, when the NBA has their mindset on someone, they have their mindset. It doesn't matter how successful they are in college at some point. So I'm just wondering, and as you watch over the weekend, I mean, obviously Cooper Flagg is, jumps off the charts. But I'm just curious that correlation of, watching guys play in college to the transition to the pros and what the NCAA tournament could mean for them.
Yeah, I think scouting has gotten a lot smarter to not get caught up so much in recency bias.
Right.
The one I always think about is Derek Williams out of Arizona, mm-hmm. who had a phenomenal tournament run. He was just incredible, and he wound up going, I think, second overall and never did anything. There are these kind of cautionary tales when you look back of guys that had incredible, like good seasons, incredible tournament runs, were older, and then, wound up getting picked too high because of the belief that, he performs in big games or he's this level of player. And the scouting is so good now. And the other thing is, you know, you really need guys that are able to adapt to how you want to play, which is why you want them so young. Well, that's a big part of it too, is you want guys that are young enough that you can mold them into pro players versus coming in with set habits. So that to me is part of that equation, where it's probably for the best, even though I think it's, you know, maybe it's unfair to some guys to not get the opportunities that maybe they've shown that they can play at. On the other end, there's been so many disasters of teams taking guys that had good tournament runs without really understanding you've got to focus on the entire history of that guy's play coming up as a young guy.
Yeah, remember the argument was Kyrie Irving or Derek Williams during that draft, and people were like, well, I don't know if Kyrie played enough games at Duke. And
Yep,
it's a great point, Matt, great point.
Yep.
Matt, thank you, buddy. We appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, guys.
Matt Moore, Action Network, Locked On NBA podcast, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
I know that this is an old man take. I accused Mad Dog Ruscha of having an old head take earlier. This is an old man take.
He would pop a gummy and rally.
Yeah, he didn't have to wake up at 5:30. That was very defensive. I would like to rescind that a little bit, because
You have it. Well, you do have a choice in life, Nick. You do have a choice.
I'm not going to ignore my child.
Your child is saying she wants to go and do the trip by herself. It's okay. It's okay at this point. Let her free.
Yeah, no, because it's the hour I get to spend with her as she leaves me at my truck and walks up to the bus stop by herself. I just think 10 p.m. and I understand West Coast folks have. I don't care. You completely inconvenienced me with five West Coast games in a row. I would abolish West Coast road trips.
I feel like so much of the fan base, it's hard to tell. Are they not paying attention right now because of it being the end of the regular season and it not really mattering as we wind it all down? Or is it because of that? It's the West Coast and a lot of people just didn't stay up late for it.
I think some of it is that. I also think... I think fans are treating this, and rightfully so, the same way we are, or the same way the Cavs are, which is, now's your time to gather your breath. This could be,
we're just gearing up, we're getting ready, so this is...
We remember the stamina it takes to follow a team through the NBA playoffs when you go to the Eastern Conference Finals or later, and it's a lot. I mean, and by the way, it is ridiculous bad times. It is incredibly... attention-packed days and nights. So, I think a lot of fans are like, I've seen what I need to see from this. We feel safe that they're going to be the number one seed in the East regardless. Wake me up when it's whatever, April 15th, April 16th, whenever the first round of the playoffs start.
Because it was a weird game, and there were things to discuss out of the game, like the idea that the Cavs were just shooting out of their mind, essentially, for the first little bit, but then Portland was still in it in a weird way. It was an odd game, Nick. But any game without Donovan's a weird game to me, though.
So with the success the Cavs are having, Kenny Atkinson is still the runaway favorite. Jake actually looked up the odds earlier today. Kenny Atkinson is minus 1,400 to be the NBA Coach of the Year this year. JB Bickerstaff, who has the second best odds, is plus 650. That is a very, very tough golf to go ahead and close in, 10 games, roughly, amount of time?
Yeah, it's not going to happen is the point.
So
JB Bickerstaff is not going to be able to close that gap.
That said, Carlos Boozer, who...
All aboard the booze cruise.
Yeah, no thank you.
Is Boozer still... He's always been hated. Is he still on the Mount Rushmore of most hated among Cleveland sports fans?
I mean, I don't think anybody hates him anymore because it's been 20 years. But just don't.
There are certain people you just don't forget, though. Like you never forget Ichiro's comments, for instance. I feel like Boozer kind of had that same.
I mean, that era of Cavs team had two good draft picks. It was LeBron and it was Carlos Boozer. Even if Boozer isn't with you in 2007, you could have turned around and traded Carlos for a piece that fit better with LeBron. Yeah, he backstabbed the Cavs. He backstabbed Gordon Gunn. And you can tell I'm still not all the way over it.
That's okay.
Well, he's trying poorly to establish a career. An NBA media post his playing career. He was on First Take. And we got some Cavaliers on Cavaliers action here as he pushed back on the idea of Kenny Atkinson as the NBA Coach of the Year this year.
Ayu Doka is the Coach of the Year. Nobody's talking about that. Everybody wants to talk about Cleveland. He was gifted a team that already had all-stars on it. I would take Bickerstaff in Detroit because nobody expected Detroit to be in the top seven, top eight in the Eastern Conference. But the Houston Rockets started from scratch during the second seed.
Yeah, but here's the thing that kind of annoys me about this point.
Yeah.
Ime wasn't the guy that drafted most of the guys that are there now. He walked into Shangoon, Green, and I think Thompson's the only guy that he was on staff for when they drafted. So it's a little bit of like Ime Udoka took a job with a bunch of top 5 and top 10 picks. Yeah, I understand the difference here. And actually, I do think Ime is an underrated coach, probably because of some of the proclivities off the field. Nia Long, we never forget. But
you remembered her name.
Yeah,
I didn't remember her name.
Yeah.
I remember weird things like that. I didn't remember her name.
We don't forget Nia Long here.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think Ime had a better chance last year of being the coach of the year. It's a 6-win improvement year over year.
Well, and that's the thing. The Cavs' improvement is going to be way greater than 6 wins.
Yeah, and even the Bickerstaff stuff.
We might have a legit 20-win improvement.
Well, and even the Bickerstaff stuff. Like, it's really impressive to go from 14 wins to a playoff team. But you will not. I mean, what he's done is very impressive. I think it's much easier with a team that had been building for about 3 drafts, because that's how long that this kind of thing, Cade Cunningham's, 3 or 4 years into his career, you start to go to the other players there. They've had those guys together. They just haven't had a lot of team success. I think it's a hell of a lot easier to go from the bottom of the NBA to the middle of the NBA than it is to go from the top 30% of the NBA to the top of the NBA.
Do you want to get after what the LeBron James of Sports Talk Radio in the morning show had to say about your Atkinson take?
Oh, no. What was it?
They disagreed with the sentiment that Atkinson is going to be a known quantity in the postseason.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, Lima doesn't believe coaches matter, and he was wrong about that last year, and okay. He's the guy that knows basketball on that show, so.
Okay. I got no follow-ups. It was just a quick address, and that was it.
I mean, I could say right now that, hey, you guys should get in on sunlight. And they'd be like, no sunlight.
No. Yeah. You'd be like, hey, puppies are great. And they'd be like, I'm more of a cat's guy.
It's all retribution because I won't cower to the LeBron James of
Sports Talk Radio.
Sports Talk Radio and his bullying ways.
Pander your way out there, big boy.
Is he also going to take a swipe at Brian Windhorst tomorrow morning?
That's true.
LeBron did it today. He's got to kind of in response do that.
Man, I don't have this. I don't want to get. I was in such a good. I hadn't taken a shot at anybody in like, I don't know, a while.
I provoked that one.
You did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'm kind of enjoying. You know, historically, I don't provoke it. Historically, you just kind of do it, and I just kind of clean up the mess. But now I like provoking.
I have a lot of really good takes in the Kenny Atkinson coach.
Did you?
I mean, it felt like we were in a roll there, and then you kind of just put the show
on. Was it a roll?
Yeah.
It kind of felt like you said everything you needed to say about it.
What do you think about Carlos Boozer's?
I think he's silly. I think he's been saying weird things in the media for a very long time to get attention, and nobody's caught on because nobody actually cares what Carlos Boozer has to say.
Oh, I thought you were talking about LeBron James of
No, I'm talking about the guy that dyed his hair. Again, Carlos Boozer.
I don't think he dyed his hair. I think that was a spray paint job.
Well, I phrased that horribly. That
Which was much like the college basketball coach. I don't even remember what the guy's name is anymore. Guys, I'm losing it too. Just do anything but spray paint.
Did he think no one would notice?
I really think Carlos Boozer thought no one would notice.
Then everybody noticed.
Everybody notices when you spray paint your head.
But I am very much of the belief of like, well, if they put him on TV, then it's enough to go ahead and warrant the discussion and have all that. It's just, I don't know anybody that is trying to take this away from Atkinson except for Carlos Boozer. And Carlos Boozer has had the most ridiculous out-of-pocket NBA takes in the previous couple months. I can't even take it seriously at this point.
Also, real quick, watch who the Cavs were last year and watch who they are now. It's a completely different team. Talent or no talent, it's a completely different team. That's Coach of the Year stuff.